Hello, college baseball fans, and welcome to episode 55 of the 11.7 podcast brought to you by College Baseball Hub. It is the Omaha edition. We got four games to talk about, plus four more that are coming up the next 2 days. James, let's crush this episode. Let's get it. James, are you familiar with the very overused but accurate term, Team of Destiny?
I think I've heard it. I think we've mentioned it a few times, and I think there's a certain team in Omaha that just might fit the bill, my friend.
Holy crap. And it might just not even be one team this year. It might actually be two. But between Mississippi State and their miracle comeback win in the ninth inning today against Auburn, and Florida State continuing to roll off that Mike Martin magic, there's two teams right now on opposite sides of the bracket that look like teams of destiny. And to any college baseball fan, no matter what team you support, there should be just a little bit of a soft spot on the inside rooting for both of these teams. And let me tell you why. Mississippi State got absolutely beat down in this game from start to finish. And they were going into the ninth inning down 4-1.
Totally outplayed.
Totally outplayed from top to bottom. And there were a couple bad breaks that went their way. But, you know, for most baseball fans, you could see on the field that Auburn was clicking on all cylinders and Mississippi State was just missing a couple, you know, key moments where they could have had big hits to, you know, get back in the game. But nothing was going their way. Right whenever I saw the bottom or top of the first inning. Sorry, I'll take that back. Let's go to the ninth inning.
After first inning, ninth inning, whatever.
After the I redirected where I wanted to go with this. After the last out of the top of the ninth inning, and that little ESPN graphic came up and said, Mangum first, Westberg second, Allen third, coming up. I was like, oh my God, they're about to tie this thing up at least. Yeah. That is just too much leadership, too many good athletes to get 1-2-3 in the bottom of the ninth. And when Mangum went first pitch double off the wall, I was like, okay, here we go. Wheels are about to fall off for Auburn. And they did the right thing, in my opinion, and went to their best pitcher, who's been fighting through some injuries, Tanner Burns. And Burns looked like he had his good stuff after that strikeout to Jordan Westberg. And I was like, okay, Auburn's got this. Boy, were we wrong. Because it just felt like everything that could have went wrong for Auburn did. And yes, the game was being played way too fast. No way to slow the game down. It was full panic mode. Between mound visits and pitchers looking back at guys and say, it's okay, I got you, I'll pick you up. Just guys being like, okay, well, yeah, we'll pick you up, man. I'll pick you up. Don't worry.
And you're exactly right. It just got out of control way too fast. Edouard Julien, third baseman. And, dude, this only happens in the game of baseball, man. Julien hits a two-run homer about 420 feet off the
absolute moonshot.
Off the best pitcher in the country to give his team a lead. And I'm like, holy crap, like, did he just, you know, do that to someone who's untouchable, you know, and Ethan Small? And he's setting himself up to be the hero, and then ends up making the throwing error that gives his team up, like, relinquishes the lead.
He also had an RBI single to put him ahead 3-0 in the fifth inning, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, he had all three RBIs at one point, like totally set up to be the hero. And then the last out, you know, just 3 hours earlier, he's going to be the man. And then just one more out to get, and it just totally changes the whole game. And now Auburn's up against the wall, man. You only see that in baseball. So such a cruel, such a hard game sometimes.
Right. And so let's talk about the play. And the play is runner on second, two outs. And we'll get into all the dramatic stuff with Elijah McNamee later. Runner on second, two outs. Ground ball hits Edouard Julien at third base. And he had two options here. Get rid of the ball like a normal infielder after one shuffle at the max. And, you know, throw a laser beam to first base, your team wins. Or something else that came up is he could have just extended both arms and tagged McNamee, who made a very poor decision just running right at him.
Yeah.
It's just not smart baseball.
I was like, what is he doing? They're going to lose.
and Julian decides to take three shuffles, let literally Elijah McNamee run right in front of him, like closer than this microphone is to my mouth. Right. Like, let him clear. Like, you go ahead. You pass by. I'm a nice Canadian. Go ahead. You go ahead. And just launches a ball. I mean, it brought me back to James's throws in high school when I was at first and he was at third, and he would hit the opposing team bullpen.
I was just trying to keep you in shape and going to go chase my balls. But
you know, I didn't run after those balls. I just sat there and watched the right fielder pick them up.
But I did feel so bad for Julian. I was confused on both their parts. I was like, oh, well, he's going to tag him because McNamee's just running into and out. But I don't know, man. It's totally wild. It's just something you will not see in a major league game. Like, just when you think you've seen it all, you have it.
And that just proves why college baseball is a more entertaining sport to watch, especially at this level. Every little thing matters, man. Like, you can't get away with mistakes that maybe you can early in the season, or maybe a major league pitcher can get away with, because, you know, he'll throw 99 up in the zone, strike the next guy out. Like, when you don't have punch-out stuff in those situations and you put the ball in play, like, good things will happen to your team. And we almost saw another bad throw the play before. Will Holland, like, short arms a throw that he had plenty of time on. And I always forget, Rankin Woolley at first base makes an unbelievable pick to kind of, like, in my eyes, save the game.
Oh, I'm 100%.
Like, okay. I'm like, okay, game's over. Like, this is it. And so sure enough, Mississippi State looks like a team of destiny because they brought out the all-black jerseys and just literally the first 25 outs of the game, it looks like Auburn was the better team. If this was your first game to ever watch college baseball, you'd probably be like, why is Mississippi State ranked higher? Like, Auburn's the better team. And just those last two outs were the hardest ones to get. But I will give credit to Mississippi State. Jake Mangum just continues his legacy. I'm not the biggest Mangum fan because I think that he's a little overhyped, which is understandable. I mean, he's put together like one of the most unbelievable careers we've ever seen in college baseball. But like people, he kind of has that Tim Tebow effect of now that he has the name and like every at bat kind of means more and people are watching more. It just kind of gets annoying as not a Mississippi State baseball fan, just a college baseball fan in general. It's just like, okay, I've had enough of this. But he did show up, put the team on his back, said, you know what, I'm the leadoff hitter. I'm going to see a first pitch fastball, and I'm going to do what I do with fastballs. I'm going to hit them hard. And so he leads off with a double, and then fast forward to Elijah McNamee hitting fourth, runner on first and second, one out, turns on a first pitch fastball, double, big hit Mac. Everybody knows that story. Yep. Shows up in the postseason a little pissed off that he's not drafted like all his other buddies are. And yeah, I mean, just the way the inning developed was the way that I knew. I was like, this is a team that has something special going for him. And I'm sorry to Auburn, and we feel for Julian. We think that, I mean, he's a great player. He played an unbelievable game, just had one minor mistake, and Mississippi State got to capitalize. So
yeah, I got a couple things on the situation. One is, if you were one of those losers to get on Twitter and go after athletes for their mistakes, like, you can pretty much go to hell, in my opinion. Like, leave the kid alone. Like, don't you have anything better to do in your life than to go pick on someone who obviously feels bad on something that just happened? So that's thing number one. Thing number two, some actual analysis on the game is the Auburn situation was especially terrifying because you are not the home team. You can have an ending like that if you're the home team. You know, maybe you can stop the bleeding and get out of the game, get out of the inning only down two runs. You can come back and see what happens. But when you're the road team, like, it's you cannot afford to let the inning get out of control. Like, there is no way to stop the bleeding. It's, we have to get out of this without giving up the lead, or we go home. And they couldn't do it. Comebacker up the middle, off pitcher's glove. The second baseman has to come up with an unbelievable play, a short hop pick, and can't do it. And Will Holland's facial expression honestly said it all. He just threw his arms up in the air after the ball went up the middle and Bliss couldn't pick it at second. He's just like, what the hell's going on, man?
Dude, and the scary thing is, I think Mississippi State would have scored another, like, two or three runs that inning if this was, like, the eighth inning.
Oh, 100%.
Like, they weren't 100%. Slowing down. They weren't slowing down one bit.
Yeah, that's not something that you just get out of right away. That's going to run its course and damage will be done.
Right. But so as far as baseball analysis goes, that's our take on the game. I will say Ethan Small kind of got ripped off quite a bit by the umpire. Both teams really did. I mean, the home plate umpire was very active, and I think for the most part did a decent job managing the game. But there were some strikes that weren't called that were literally, like, couldn't be any more closer to the middle of the plate than I've ever seen. Like, a ball. Like, usually it's the other way around. Usually they call strikes, the strike zone is expanded, and they call strikes 6 inches off the plate. I've never seen it where there were so many strikes not called that were inside the box completely. And so that's just college umpires for you. College umpires are the worst sometimes. But as far as managing the game, I felt like the home plate umpire did a decent job. But the biggest thing I wanted to talk about in this game was the, I guess we're not going to call it marketing side, but college baseball has got to do a better job of getting more excitement in the booth, calling the games. And we love Kyle Peterson. I mean, we love Eddie Perez. Carl Ravish does a good job. But those guys at some times, I feel like are calling a golf tournament.
Yeah,
there is no excitement. The fans are going nuts in the stands. The players are getting hype in the dugout. And we got Kyle Peterson and Eddie Perez talking with bubbles in their throat. Like, literally, like, it sounds like they're trying to eat a bowl of cereal and call a game of baseball. Like, give us Chris Burke. Give us Rooney.
Ben McDonald.
Give us Eric Burns. Dallas Braden. Give us somebody with some excitement and some passion and enthusiasm calling these games. Because if it wasn't for Mississippi State celebrating on the field, you would have never known it was the walk-off single up the middle. It was ridiculous.
You're exactly right. And I've got a case in point. Gus Johnson for college basketball is literally famous for his enthusiasm. Right. Let's get him in the booth. I don't care if he knows a damn thing about college baseball. I don't care if
he doesn't know what he's talking about.
I want him ah-ha-ing after every called strike.
Honestly, I don't even want to see Gus Johnson in the booth with a headset talking about the game. I just want to see him between Eddie Perez and Kyle Peterson just ah-ha-ing in their face. Like, you can mute it out on TV. Just get them hype. Like, yell at those guys and get them uncomfortable. But, man, I didn't want to have to talk about this on this episode. But, jeez, like, it came to a point where I was like, I'm about to fall asleep watching a College World Series game because it sounds like, oh, and here's his fourth shot, and this one's for double bogey, and hits it out of the rough. And it was like, what is going on here? And this is the under the lights at TD Ameritrade in the heart of America, Omaha, Nebraska, and we are literally acting like it's nap time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know we have a point when guys like Ben and I were considering falling asleep during the game. And it's not necessarily because of the game. It's just because, you know, attitudes are contagious.
Yeah.
They really are. If you've ever been around, not that these guys are negative because they're not, but if you've ever been around a negative person, it just eats at you, man. So attitudes are contagious. If you've got someone in the booth who's excited about what they're doing, you get a little more excited and you might think twice before changing the channel. Maybe we'd get some more viewers. But overall, I also have another point. So we've seen four games in this College World Series. And you talked about this on Twitter. Can we move the fences in? Can we get a little bit more offense? Like, I know we've got some good pitchers and all, but I mean, come on, they're not Nolan Ryan. Like,
the game still moves slow. Even like that 1-0 game. Florida State and
Arkansas.
It was like a 3.5-4 hour 1-0 game. Like, the innings weren't flying by, so you might as well put some offense into it. I'm gonna take a hot take here. There would be more people excited to watch college baseball, watch a 4-hour game that ends up 12-9, than a 2-hour 45-minute game that's 1-0. That's exactly my take. Right. I think there's more people that would be happy with that. And because you see balls just absolutely scorched to the outfield, and every team plays it the same nowadays. Like, now that the word is out that this field is big and home runs will not happen, what happens? They move the outfielders back almost to the warning track and say no doubles. We're not going to have any doubles.
You're going to have to hit three singles in a row to beat.
And that's what happens. It's either three singles in a row, or you start walking people, or there's errors. Like, that is the only way runs are scored, unless you're Austin Martin and Vanderbilt, only hitting two homers today. So move the fences in. I mean, It's not that big of a deal. Instead of 375 in the gap, make it 355. Instead of 335 down the line, make it 320.
Hey, go ahead.
That would make things so much better because now people are going to move their outfield and take away those bloop singles. You get extra base. You get more doubles and triples that way and home runs. And that's what people want to see. I mean, the bigger the field doesn't mean there's more extra base hits. It actually means that they're going to take away those extra base hits because they're in play now.
No, you're,
what you see with smaller fields is the outfielders move in, take away the single because they expect everything over their head to be a homer when that's not the case. You can hit ground balls and line drives past them.
No, you're,
move
you're,
the fences in Omaha. Do the right thing.
You're exactly right. I agree. And I also have a question. Do you know if they use Wilson baseballs or Rawlings baseballs at this? It's been a couple years since we played, so I don't know. But I know that, for example, our conference, we had Rawlings baseballs. And I know that you guys had Wilson balls. And they were – because we went and played Wofford. And the balls, you could literally see the differences between the size and the baseballs. They look like they were used for two different sports.
Yeah. So the Wilson balls just absolutely fly.
Yeah.
They're like bigger golf balls.
Yes. I don't know if they use those, but if they don't, they need to. The game that just concluded 30 minutes ago in Auburn, Mississippi State, 4 runs scored in the ninth, total of 9 in the game. It's the highest amount, the highest run total we've seen throughout the 4 games. And, you know, there's 5 errors involved to get there.
Right.
There's 5 errors involved to get there.
It was, I mean, they got to move the fences. They got to do something. They got to do something proactive to make the, because you watch the super regionals and the regionals, and there's 9, 10, 11 runs scored every single game, at least. And, like, that's exciting baseball. And you know, then you.
You know what else I think contributes to it? Because we also have people in the booth saying things. You know, someone gets a base hit to right field, and a common analysis is that's a great job. It's a great job there because the player didn't try to do too much with that one. He just didn't try to do too much, you know. And the reason the guys in the booth are saying it is because every freaking college coach in the country has either A, heard that saying, or B, says it himself. And it's just not conducive to actually scoring more runs. So let me just put it to you this way. And you, wherever you're listening, whatever you do for a living, just show up to your office tomorrow and tell whoever is, you know, monitoring, or go up and just tell your coworkers that, you know what, today I'm just going to try and not do too much today, and we'll just see how it goes.
See how that goes.
Are you kidding me? In what other occupation or universe is it acceptable to just be like, you know what, I'm just going to try and not be that successful?
Ooh, I got an answer for you.
What's that?
Amateur umpires.
That's exactly
right. They don't try to do too much.
You know what? That's got to be part of the. But in all joking aside, I think that's part of the problem too. Is the common, you know, language and thought processes inside the game are just not conducive to actually scoring runs. It's, you know, people are afraid to lose more than they want to win. And if I don't try too hard, then maybe I'll poke the ball around the infield, and you know, it'll go well. And sometimes it will. Sometimes the star third baseman throws the ball on the stands. But, I mean, that's just – we're just – maybe we're complaining right now, but I think it's – I think it is quality complaining. I think it's knowledgeable complaining. I think there's some – I think it's a lot of things that people have been thinking, but maybe we are using our this platform that we have been given by our fans to voice everyone else's opinion. So those are some overall insights from
imagine
the first 2 days.
James, you're a big football fan. Imagine if Bill Belichick told Tom Brady, "Hey Tom, you know conditions aren't great today. Don't try to do too much."
Yeah.
Like, how do you think Tom Brady would take that?
What's scoring? Hey, you know what? Don't try to score too many points today. I don't think you know what is not going to happen in the Vanderbilt dugout when they play on Tuesday. Or Tim Corbin is not going to go up to JJ Blidé and say, "Hey JJ, you know, I know you've been like leading our team in RBIs, but I think you've been just doing too much of that lately. Why don't you just like take it down a notch?" Like, stop it. Stop
hey, Austin Martin, imagine before Austin Martin's first at bat for Vanderbilt today, hitting a leadoff homer. What if Corbin went up to him and was just like, "Hey, Austin, dude, I know it's a big game. Like, we really need to set the tone early, but just don't try to do too much. Like, just lay back, you know, try to maybe hit a single to the right side instead of, you know, put a bomb over there, lead off the game." So you're absolutely right. That's
like,
just
why is it such a crime to try to be successful? Like, why is it such a bad thing to try to be successful?
You're gonna fail 7 times out of 10, sometimes 8 out of 10.
You might as well get yours.
Yeah. Might as well try to put one over the fence. Come on.
Or burn one in the gap, make someone do a double cut one time. You're like, you fire up your boys sliding into second. God, but so yeah, so in the last 4 games, we've seen just an enormous amount of offense. My neck hurts from watching all these balls fly over the yard. Second take. These 4 games went exactly as planned, right? Everyone saw, you know, Texas Tech falling to Michigan. We all saw Florida State beating Arkansas game one. You know, I've thrown out the idea of trying to predict what's going on. You know, I try to be a little knowledgeable. I try to have some good insight. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to enjoy these games and share thoughts and ideas with the fans, because we're all enjoying this together. And it's going to set up for a good Monday and Tuesday. We've got 2 teams in Texas Tech and Arkansas. One of them is guaranteed to go home.
Yeah. No,
guaranteed
absolutely.
Guaranteed to go home.
Eventually they would have gotten to that point, but not this early. We were not expecting this early at all. In fact, we were both penciling this in to be the winner's bracket game.
Yes,
100%. Both of those teams were supposed to win and take care of business, especially with Isaiah Campbell on the mound with Arkansas. So let's talk a little bit about that game. Arkansas goes and plays against Florida State, who kind of also has that Team of Destiny label on them. Mike Martin's last season. We've heard it all. We've seen the pregame stuff leading up to the games. So Mike Martin kind of has his team in the right direction, because I'll tell you what, that team looked as confident as ever, tied 0-0 in the 8th inning.
Yeah.
Like, they were just like, they seemed like they just knew they were going to push a run across and Flowers was going to go run into the bullpen and throw 3 warm-up pitches and close the game out. Dude, it was like it was scripted to him almost.
Dude, I tell you, I'm rooting for the guy now. Like,
We've taken so many shots at him all year.
I wouldn't say necessarily him. I would say the program and its reputation. Right. That's what I would say. But I'm rooting for him. What the hell? Like, it's kind of unbelievable. 40 years in a row, and the guy has never gotten a chance to – never won the tournament. Like, it's almost impossible if you get that many shots at it.
I mean, it looks like it's going to boil down to hopefully – I'm not going to say hopefully, because I'm fine with either of them. But what if it came down to Florida State and Mississippi State in the finals, where you have first-year head coach at Mississippi State – not first-year
career-wise, but
at Mississippi State first year, Lemonis, going against – number 41 or 41st season, I think, as a head coach, Mike Martin.
802nd. He's the Yoda of college baseball.
Yeah, and right. he's never won it. He's never won the whole thing. So that would be a really good storyline to capture, you know, maybe some outsiders who don't watch college baseball to actually tune in, get to see a little bit of Mississippi State, who's never won it as an organization, as a program. They've never won a national title. And Florida State, who hasn't won it since Mike Martin's been there. So that would shape up well. But it would also be really cool to see Arkansas go out there and get revenge at a, you know, because they should have won the national title last year. They were they were one error away from winning it all last year.
Well, I tell you, they're up against it after, you know, Cody Scroggins pitched, Cronin pitched. I know they have a day off, but what I'm really concerned with is whoever's going to start the game, because the numbers for guys number 2 and 3, starting with Connor Nolan, it ain't promising going up against a Texas Tech team who's officially playing for their lives.
Right.
I hate to see either one of these two teams go home. If Arkansas is going to have to slug, in my opinion, you know, score 7-8 runs, and
which they can. They can easily do.
They have, like, between Kerstad and Martin, those are two super sophomores. Like, I think they're every bit as talented as Austin Martin, and I think the Vanderbilt guys just get more press for some reason, you know.
Yeah.
But so I think they definitely have the power and the star power to pull it off. I think the pitching is definitely a question mark, but that's how I see that's how I see the important details of that elimination game.
Right. So let's focus on that side of the bracket. So for the fans who don't have it visually laid out in front of them or memorized by now, that side of the bracket looks like Michigan and Florida State are playing a winner's bracket game today or tomorrow. Wherever you're at right now, Monday, they are playing a winner's bracket game at 7 p.m. But the game before that is the two Titans. We got Texas Tech and we got Arkansas battling for their season. Loser goes home. Winner goes and plays the next day against, or two days from now, against the loser of Michigan and Florida State. So Michigan, let's focus on them a little bit. They took it to Texas Tech.
Yes, sir.
There was some points where Texas Tech could have easily came back and took the lead or tied the game up.
You're going to get your opportunities. That's how right. That's how it works.
What was really disappointing to me, as somebody who picked Texas Tech to make it to the finals, Texas Tech looked like they were playing a midweek game against Incarnate Word or UT Arlington, you know, on the road.
And that's not what we expected, because we said on this show that we think they're a blue-collar program.
Right, exactly. And so I don't know if it is – it might be a good thing. Maybe they're not making the moment bigger than itself, but it kind of just looks like complacency. Like, hey, we've been here 4 of the last 6 years. Like, we get praised for it. People love us. Like, we're here. Like, we're playing with house money. Let's just, you know, enjoy it. Let's go try to – I don't know.
Who's man. Michigan? Michigan can't beat us.
Yeah, we're playing a Big Ten school. We don't have to play UCLA. And, dude, I'll tell you what. Michigan.
Looks good.
They look good. And they have some freak athletes on that team. And I know we've talked about it, but I got to reiterate it to people. Like, this Michigan team could find themselves in the finals very, very easily. You beat Florida State tomorrow, like, you're sitting real pretty with either Arkansas and Texas Tech already out. The other one would have to play an extra 2 games to get there. And Florida State, who was a 3 seed in the tournament, so it's not like you're playing a national seed. Michigan has 3 really good starting pitchers. They still have Tommy Henry, who might be one of the better pitchers that nobody knows about, looking to throw game 2. I'm assuming he might not. But
we gotta give Michigan props for bringing in their starting pitcher in relief to close out the game one. Like, hey, we're just gonna win. We're just that you know what, that coach is just trying to do too much. You know, I'm just trying to do too much bringing in his freaking starting pitcher. No, he's trying to win the game. That's why we do this. That's why they put in all
win
the hours
game one, because the difference between winning game one and game two is a 2-game swing plus potentially an extra 2 days of rest if you win the second game. So Since it is a double elimination on that side of the bracket, you win game 1 and 2. You have to play. You only have to win 1 more game, while the other teams have to win 3 or possibly 4 more games.
Yeah.
So, Michigan looks really good, but they're going to go against Van Eyck tomorrow for Florida State. Who
I love him.
He's been up to like 98-99 this year. Just a huge specimen. Just a unit, man. He's just a big unit. Throws hard. Florida State, they have some dudes that just size-wise, I know they're not much bigger than every other team, but when they stand in the box and they have like that wide, like slightly open stance, It just looks like an MLB The Show game. They look like a creative player. And they just look like they have the look, man. They have the swag.
I want that one.
Yeah, like, pretty much if they all lined up backyard baseball style, like sitting on the bleachers and you have to pick one by one, I would find myself picking a lot of Florida State guys just for the swag that they have.
Oh, yeah. They do look very swaggy, but I got to hit you with an over-under in this Michigan-Florida State game. I'm putting it at 6.5. I'm putting the over-under.
I think every under is hit. So, in fact, every under has hit. The closest one was this Mississippi State game that just ended. It was at 9.5.
Which,
with Ethan Small on the mound, you think, oh, under, no doubt. But, it got to 9. But every other game was set at like 11, 11.5, 12. Uh-huh. Every single one of them was not even close.
Man.
Not even close. So 6.5, I'll take the over, because if it gets to a 3-3 tie, it's guaranteed.
Someone's got to win.
Yeah. Yeah,
someone's got to win.
But, yeah, the Michigan, their defense at time. I'll tell you what. This is where I knew Michigan was the real deal. Whenever they lost game 2 to UCLA in the Super Regionals, committing 5 errors and still going, I think, 12 or 13 innings.
Yeah.
Like, they hung in there. The bullpen depth was shown. I think I saw something where their starting pitchers have like a 1.5 ERA in the postseason, something like that. Like, it's crazy. So we talked about on last episode, we both think it would be good for the sport of college baseball to have a Northern team win, even though we have a lot of Southern biased people listening to the show. Just hear us out. It would just include a lot more attention on the sport and people will not say the season's over before it's actually over.
Right.
We're going to suck this year. We're not going to win at all. So, like, why does it matter?
Michigan did it. Maybe we can do it. So, yeah. Those are my thoughts about the Michigan-Florida State game. I expect it to be low scoring. I think CJ Van Dyke is going to absolutely shove. I think it's going to be one of those games where, like, whoever can work a walk and then, you know, get a looping liner single and then bunt two guys into scoring position. And, like, the game's going to get shortened.
Right.
That's my opinion. I think the game's going to get very short, and it's going to come down to two, maybe three meaningful at-bats. And that's what you're going to see. And the winner's going to be 2-0 sitting pretty, man. That's what I think that's going to look like. I'm excited to watch it, though.
And how many times have we seen the graphic on ESPN where it says, you know, 34 of the last 38 winners of the College World Series have won game one.
All right, well, let me put you on the spot then. So between Florida State, Michigan, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, give me your power rankings in order then, if those four are the most likely to win based off history.
Power rankings as far as who I think could win at all?
Yeah, in order. And obviously, it's tough.
Mississippi State won just because I think they're the team of destiny. And then I guess it would be kind of counterproductive to take Vanderbilt too, right? Because they're on the same side of the bracket.
Well, as long as you pick one ahead of the other, I think you're within the rules.
Okay. Let's go Mississippi State, then Vanderbilt, then Florida State, then Michigan. But okay. I think that would be a majority of people saying that. The good thing is we don't know. It could be flip-flopped. It could
no,
right
you
now.
Know, we're just breaking it down. We're not telling you to put your life savings on
I think this is the year, though, that somebody that loses game one finds themselves at a chance to win it all. They go to the final. Like, I'll flip the question on you. How about that?
Okay.
Between Texas Tech, Arkansas, Auburn, and Louisville, who is the most likely to come all the way back and win a national championship?
I think it's Louisville for sure because of the overall depth of the pitching staff. They have guy after guy they can actually roll out there. Arkansas does not. Texas Tech more so does. Auburn obviously up against it more than any other team due to the injuries. Boom, analysis, done.
I think Auburn's done, dude. I don't think they come back tomorrow or 2 days from now and win a game. Like, I think Louisville is sitting really good right now. They lose a close one to Vanderbilt. They didn't use Detmers did just a good enough job. Like, had two bad pitches to Martin. So they didn't lose a lot of depth out of their bullpen. There wasn't a lot of high stress situations. So, like, they don't have to, you know, think about, oh man, if we would have done this, if we would have done that. Like, they just got beat. They got beat by one guy. Yeah. So I think you're right with Louisville because they're gonna beat the crap out of Auburn, I think, 2 days from now, because they're mentally just done. Now Auburn's stuff has shifted from we could win this whole thing to, man, we're just glad to be here. It's good for the program. Like, yada, yada,
yeah,
yada.
Yeah, 100%. Smell the roses.
Yeah.
Let's get pounded by Louisville and go.
And then
home.
Also, on the other side of the bracket, you still got to think about Texas Tech and Arkansas coming all the way back and winning just because Michigan and Florida State aren't the same teams as Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, right? Sure. So if let's say scenario tomorrow Arkansas goes out and beats Texas Tech. Okay, now they play the loser of Michigan and Florida State. Let's say Michigan loses tomorrow, and now Arkansas has to beat Michigan, who's now you're facing their number three, possibly number four pitcher. Mm-hmm. Okay, like, take your chances there, and then you just have to beat Florida State twice, you know, in one day, which we've seen days where Florida State looks like the worst team in the Southeast with that roller coaster ride. Not saying it's going to happen, but it just takes one bad day to catch Florida State, and you beat them twice, and boom, now you're in the championship game with a clean slate, and it's just a best 2 out of 3 series.
You know what? I agree with a lot of that, and that gives me some insight right here. I've got a bold prediction. Whoever loses the matchup between Michigan and Florida State will also be bounced and lose the next game to whoever comes out of the Tech Arkansas game. I think one of these teams, Tech or Arkansas, will find themselves and still to have a chance to get into the finals.
Right.
I think Michigan and Florida State understand they don't want to mess around. They don't want to have to go back into loser's bracket, come back and beat someone twice. They don't want to have to do it. Florida State and Michigan tomorrow are going to play, like, this game is going to put them in the finals. Like, you can mark it down. We've already seen Michigan's head coach pull out all the stops. I think Mark Martin's going to do the same thing. So it's going to be awesome baseball manana.
Yeah, and I can't believe we made it this far into the show without talking about how absolutely dominant Isaiah Campbell and Drew Parrish were. Like, how much of a treat was that to sit down and watch those two literally one-up each other every single inning? It was like every half inning, you're like, oh, man, like Florida State's got all the momentum. Drew Parrish just fist pumped and pounded his chest. It's the fifth inning. And then Isaiah Campbell goes, psh, 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 nine pitches, we're out of here. Come on, boys, we're back on offense. Like, it was just two dudes letting their nuts hang and just saying, beat me. Oh, I'll beat you. Oh, you're not beating me. Oh, yeah, I am. Oh, no, you're not. And it came down to J.C. Flowers, the two-way sensation, who I think scored the go-ahead run, right?
He scored the go-ahead run on the sack fly
and then sprinted to the bullpen, threw like six warm-up pitches and closed the game out.
Dude,
how special is that?
He's electric. That is you know what that is? That's entertainment. That's good product. That's something good to pitch. You don't get to see that at the major league level or anything. You don't get to see that at the major league level. It's just awesome product, man.
Right. Awesome.
And we should be excited about that, you know? In the booth.
We should be pumped whenever you see a guy score a run, slide, and then put his hat and glove on and run to the bullpen. Like, we should be pumped to see that. Like, he should get a standing ovation as he runs out there from every fan. But
100%.
But yeah, Drew Parrish, that's the same kid last year that had an All-American season, came back this year, and he's an undersized lefty. He's not somebody that scouts, you know, drool over. But he is a guy that scouts see as, you know, he throws 92 with that size, 92 with good sink and run, locates the ball well, throws up in the zone. Somebody that I would compare him to maybe like a younger Wade Miley or somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that.
But he went out there and just said, Coach Martin, this is my game. I got it. Let me go as long as I can. I can compete with Isaiah Campbell. I can compete with, you know, probably the second best, maybe even arguably the first best pitcher in the SEC at times. And that was just fun to watch. I know it was a 1-0 game and we're rooting for runs, but something about it, dude.
We do admire quality performances.
And that's – I don't know. I thought, honestly, Arkansas was going to come out there and just smash Parrish.
Yes.
I was second guessing the coaching staff. I thought Van Eyck was going to pitch game one and just go toe-to-toe with Isaiah Campbell because they're similar types of pitchers. Mm-hmm. But, whew.
Yeah, well, you know what's really awesome about that for Drew Parrish to go out there and do what he did? The College World Series is a reset button, man. Like, yeah, you had a terrible season compared to your standards. Like, it's not like he was hurt. Like, the dude went out there, got the ball every Friday, and just didn't get the results he was expecting. But, you know, it's okay, man. It's game one of the College World Series. Like, we didn't expect to be here. So you can take all that pressure, roll it right off on your shoulders. Your coach is going to answer every damn question at the press conference. The whole thing's about him. You know, he doesn't seem like he's stressed about anything. Right. And so it's just an awesome example in baseball how everything that's happened to Drew Parrish over the last 4, 5, 6 months, like it didn't matter for those 3 hours. And he got to go put his head on the pillow, feel like a new man. And
it was kind of like he was in a 12-month Elijah McNamee like slump.
Yeah.
Elijah McNamee ended his season last year on pitch, I think, 129 of the game, that walk-off homer to send Florida State home. So it seemed like he was in a slump after that. Like, he was mentally not the same. And when he got to Omaha, it was a clean slate. He saw Elijah McNamee coming down to, you know, watch that game most likely, and was like, you know what, I'm going to get this guy back. And how cool of a storyline would that be? They meet up game one of the finals, Elijah McNamee, Drew Parrish, and they get a little bit of redemption.
Wow. That'd be wild. But so That's some of our opinions. Ben, I want to get your thoughts on the winner's bracket game on the other side in Vanderbilt and Mississippi State. You know, so these teams have only played once all season. It was in the SEC tournament. We got to see Ethan Small match up with Drake Fellows in that game, and I was very excited for that matchup. So what do you see round two coming with even higher stakes? You know, this isn't the SEC tournament anymore. This is for all the marbles. This is the winner's bracket game.
Right. So is this Kumar Rocker versus JT Ginn?
It's got to be.
It's got to be, right? So yeah. The two best freshmen in the nation facing off against each other. Kumar Rocker coming off a no-hitter, 19 punch-outs, And then you got JT Ginn, who's coming off injury. So you look at it and you're like, oh,
freshman phenoms.
Yeah, you look at it and you're like, man, like, looks like one freshman has all the momentum in the world while the other one, you know, is trying to battle for stay in the starting rotation. Like, hey, coach, I can still do it. Like, coach, I got it. I promise. Like, trust me. So, yeah, but I think what's going to happen in that game, if it is JT Ginn and Kumar Rocker, I think it's going to be – actually, let me sit here and visualize. I think
Mississippi State cannot afford to have any defensive miscues at whatsoever.
Right.
If Mississippi State – I wouldn't even call it a weakness. It's just factual. They're not a top fielding team in the infield in the league. They're not,
I would love to see their stats fielding on natural surface versus turf.
Ooh.
I would love to see that because I think that their fielding percentage is higher than it should be because they do play home games on that turf. And I've seen multiple times, I think even in the SEC championship, the SEC tournament, where they were on that natural surface and they just kind of played slower and less confident with the glove. That might be a underlying.
I think you're confusing Louisville for Mississippi State right here, my friend, but that's okay.
Wait, hold on. We're talking.
Yeah, you're talking about turf.
Mississippi State definitely has turf infield.
They have turf home plate.
You're right. Dang it.
You're good. You're good, man. You're totally good.
That's what makes this show so great is just me being an idiot, like probably 12% of the time. 12% of the time you get a good treat as a listener because I'm an idiot.
No, you're not an idiot.
I'm a lovable idiot though, right?
You're our co-host, my friend. You're our co-host. But
maybe fun fact. Let's spin this a little bit to make me look not as dumb. Mississippi State, your field maintenance crew, unbelievable. Because on TV, it looks like turf.
It looks real good.
It looks real good on TV, guys. Keep it up.
It looks pristine. But I don't think that their infielders are going to be able to make any type of mistakes whatsoever against a team like Vanderbilt. And again, I really can't help but go back to the first inning. Like, you have to get Martin and Blade out. Like, you have to. You do not want them coming up for their second at bat in the second or third inning. You mm-hmm. just can't. You want them coming up to bat, because here's what happens. If you can get them out, then the lineup gets progressively easier to handle by nature, because those are the best hitters. So what can happen is you can have them come up to bat in the fourth inning and they haven't scored a run. You've just shortened the game. And when you're playing against someone who's better than you, they have the most draft picks in the country, you would like to shorten the game. You would like to shorten the game. So that's kind of some insight on that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the loser's bracket, we've already talked about in that side of the bracket, but the biggest storyline there has got to be how does Auburn bounce back from just one of the ultimate collapses we've seen on this stage. And Louisville, who had, they were two pitches away from winning that game 1-0. If Austin Martin doesn't go deep twice, they win that game 1-0. So two totally different ends of the spectrum, very low, I guess, low energy on the Louisville side and very high energy on the Auburn side.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun to kind of set the tone 2 days from now, that 2:00 matchup. And then for tomorrow's matchup, I kind of look at the same thing. You had Texas Tech lose that very low energy game against Michigan. Like, there was obviously some crucial points in it, but there was never a time where I was standing up like in shock, like, oh my God, did that just happen? And then you have Florida State and Arkansas, where it felt like the whole game I was on the edge of my seat, like, oh my God, this pitch could mean so much. This, like, it's 0-0 until the eighth inning. This pitch could mean anything. Like, it could change the whole game. So very high energy versus low energy going on. And you really get to find out what teams are made of. And I know this is so cliche, and I hate myself for saying it. But you really find out what teams are made of in these loser bracket games. And I like watching those more than the winner bracket games. I don't know why. I think I like a little bit of the emotional side where kids are, you know.
They don't want to play their last game.
I'm kind of evil in that aspect. I like watching kids, you know, freak out and cry in the dugout. I just think it's good for the game. But
it's good entertainment. It's good product.
So I guess the last thing we'll talk about on this episode, out of the four games going on, Michigan, Florida State, Texas Tech, Arkansas, Vandy, Mississippi State, Auburn, Louisville, which of those four are you most excited to watch, and which of those four are you the least excited to watch?
I'm most excited to watch Texas Tech, Arkansas, because I think whoever wins that game will be playing for the right to be in the finals, you know, in the final pairing.
Yeah. But
And I also want to see it because I think they're both capable of being in that game. Like, I really don't think that
Oregon Oregon State lost their first game last year.
Wow. How about look at you.
And they came back and won the whole thing.
You know what?
At least that's what my little brother told me. He texted me that sitting across the room listening to the show live. He's in town, so he texted me that Oregon State lost game one. If that didn't happen, blame Will Upton. You can find him on Twitter and you can find him on Instagram. Blow his DMs up.
Don't dox the poor kid.
Will, who'd they lose to? Game one. Washington.
Our fighting coach Donegal McFergus.
Yeah, the Donegals.
I'm least excited for Louisville Auburn, mostly because I feel bad for what happened to Auburn, and I think Louisville is not going to allow their season to come to an end. But at the same time, it could be an interesting game. Like, Louisville, it's not that crazy for Louisville to go 2-Q, man. Like, they already lost one. Like, hello?
I already tweeted it today. Those guys can't hit, man.
Like, they need to swing at 3-0 fastballs. Like, I don't care. Just, like, swing.
They can hit. They just don't. It's like someone tweeted at me perfectly. They replied to my tweet that said, I'm, like, stunned that Louisville can't hit. And he goes, yeah, you would think they would be real sluggers out there in Louisville. And I'm like, that's a good joke, man, but not now. Not now.
Dude, you're exactly right. Like, they put up two runs in the ACC tournament. Lost to Illinois State, only scored two runs, and then they turned it on when they were in the losers bracket of their own regional. They beat up heavily on worse teams. And their Georgia Tech series.
Like, what's going to happen is they're going to put up 14 runs against Auburn and then put up like three in the next game and go 1-2, but be like, hey, we averaged, you know, 8 runs a game.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, unreal.
My pick to win it all just can't hit. Oh, Will just lied to me. They lost to North Carolina, not Washington.
That's fine. They lost.
Hey, not only am I an idiot, but it runs in the family. My little
dude, you don't spread that stuff over here. I've got enough of my own problems. Let's be honest. But it's so strange to watch. It's like, hit the ball. Like, you guys have the athletes. Maybe they're just trying not to do too much. Try to do more.
I think the best way I can sum up Louisville's offense is sometimes I feel like their bats are dead. Like, the physical pieces of metal that they use, I feel like they're using, like, they're, like, challenging themselves. Yeah, they're like, hey, we're not gonna make this out of full composite metal. Like, we're going to make this out of, like, some lead. Make it a little heavier, and the ball just doesn't jump off as much. I don't know. It's just like, oh, he barreled that ball up, and it goes 220 feet right to the left fielder. I'm like, Jesus, man, hit the ball. But, yeah, I would agree with you. I think taking that same question into my own opinion, most excited, I think I'm actually most excited to watch Vandy, Mississippi State, just for the freshman phenom battle. But I don't know. The Auburn-Louisville game is definitely my least look. I'm not looking forward to that game as much as the rest, just because I think Auburn's going to get destroyed. I think it's going to be just a very dark turn to their season.
Unfortunately.
And hopefully that's not the case, but convince me otherwise. I think that's what's going to happen. But as far as today and yesterday's action, I like how the games were played for the most part. The umpires were questionable sometimes, but you got to give it up to the 50,000 people that showed up each day. At TD Ameritrade, just blew the door, or I was going to say blow the roof off of it.
They did. They blew it off so far.
There's no roof. Yeah, there's no roof there. So I'm assuming there's probably doors in that stadium, so they blew the doors off of that stadium, I'd like to assume. But I'm excited for tomorrow's action. I'm excited to hopefully get some runs being scored. I'm tired of this one. I'm tired of these soccer scores, James.
I am too.
The Women's World Cup is outscoring the College World Series, and that needs to change.
Yeah, over you under.
Beyond that.
No, you're right. Over under. Who's going to score more goals? Team USA or pick whoever scores the most in this freaking tournament in any
team
one
USA,
game?
Team USA women's soccer scored more goals in their first matchup than we saw runs scored today.
Oh, yeah.
There was 12 runs scored today. No, wait, actually. What's 9 plus 4? I'm an idiot.
That would be 13. It's the same.
There's the same amount of runs being scored today as there were women's soccer goals scored game one.
Shocker.
Shocker. But you guys, we will be back probably 2 days from now, I'm assuming. One day, next day. We're going to go live on Twitter in one of these days. It'll be fun. Yes. So you guys just stay connected with us on social media. We'd love to talk baseball with you. But besides that, get some sleep.
And besides that, if you are talking mess to any of these players on Twitter, specifically Edouard Julien, do us all a favor and step in front of a moving vehicle tomorrow.
We don't we don't actually say that for disclaimer reasons. We don't want to get sued. Don't step in front of a vehicle like James said.
Oh, come on.
Well, you can. How about just delete your social media? Can we agree with that? Don't tell them. Yeah. All right. Do whatever you want, guys. We're not your boss. We'll be back. All right, James, we have to do our MVP picks for the College World Series because it is a fan question. I'm rolling, since we have to pick the winner or the MVP of the winning team, I'm going with Reed Detmers. I think he throws an awesome game one of the double elimination bracket and an awesome game one of the best of three championship series. Reed Detmers is my pick. I'm expecting 2-0, maybe 15 or 16 innings pitched. And
a billion strikeouts.
Maybe like one strike or maybe like one run given up, something like that. But who's your College World Series MVP?
I'm going to give the fans a position player to look out for. Alex Benellis, freshman infielder, the third baseman for Louisville. The kid's the real deal. He absolutely rakes. He's not scared. I've seen him in big-time situation after big-time situation come up clutch. And I think it's the year of the freshman in college baseball, honestly. It's a new era. Alex Benellis, mark it down, World Series MVP.
That'd be pretty cool. Win the College World Series MVP and get to come back for two more years.
Amen, dude. That's what I think.
Cool. And then, so the next question that we have to take care of before you get into your segment is, would it be good for the sport if Michigan wins the College World Series since they're a northern team? My answer is easy. I think yes, absolutely.
100%.
I mean, it would be good to like get the other half of the country involved in college baseball.
That would make too much sense, Ben.
Yeah, and then you would get guys that maybe want to stay up north. Like if they're from up north, they might want to stay up north and play for a, you know, a Big Ten team. And maybe we don't have such, and this is probably just bizarre to hear, but maybe we don't have such loaded SEC teams or ACC teams. But I don't know if this just one championship will, you know, inflate the northern school's interest in baseball. But it would be a good little slap in the face of the Big Ten and say maybe invest more in baseball.
Yeah.
So let's see if there's any other. Oh, first to exit the tournament. I think it has to be
Auburn. I'm going to say Auburn gets a nice 0-2. Thanks for coming. Nice little boost to the recruiting resume. Good story. You know, like a nice accomplishment. And
go ahead. I mean, it sucks because they're going to be playing against the loser of Vanderbilt and Louisville. That's going to suck. Like, because they'll probably lose to Ethan Small and Mississippi State and then get matched up 2 days later with either Vanderbilt or Louisville. And we just talked about how both of those teams match up well in the loser's bracket. So Auburn, I think, is the first team out. And, so that's pretty much it, James. What was your segment you want to talk about? We'll end on that.
Well, I'm just going to give a couple of tidbits and analysis on how some of these teams are going to go wrong in this tournament. So where if you see them lose and you see them get into trouble, this is why. I'm going to start with Vanderbilt. Just some quick hitting points. Their starters actually get hit hard. A lot of extra base hits. Over 30 extra base hits given up by Drake Fellows. Double-digit home runs. Lots of hard contact. I know it's a big yard, but there's a big potential for them to just get lit up. And if you get in a loser's bracket because your pitching got lit up, I mean, that's the way Vanderbilt's going to go down. Like, they're uber talented, the most draft guys. I already said that, but the numbers are what they are, and they're prone to get lit up. It's very odd. I can't make heads or tails of them. How can you have so much talent but continue to just give up oobles and oobles of extra base hits? So
maybe because they're up by 10 runs every game and they just sort of fastballs down the middle.
Not when it's your starting pitchers doing it. I don't know, man. So anyways, that's what I feel about Vanderbilt. For Mississippi State, here's how Mississippi State can get in trouble. Misusing of their assets, of their bullpen. The guy with the most innings out of the bullpen this year, Jordan Liebelt, right-handed sidearm, low three-quarter guy, unbelievable two-seam. It's honestly major league caliber. Problem, he can't get lefties out, or he doesn't get lefties out. The numbers are there. It's not just because he's right-handed. He really struggles to get them out. He has their most innings out of the pen. If they have to rely on him to get lefties out with runners in scoring position, hold your breath. Literally hold your breath. I'm going to go with another team that Arkansas. If they go wrong, two things. One, Connor Noland, also major trouble there. Gets hit hard. Major ground ball guy. Ground balls are scary in this tournament because you can,
fly they can ball. Roll 400 feet to the wall.
Right, you get the ball 400 feet to the wall. Ground balls are scary because you can hit it in between short and third and get dinky base hits, and you can go first to third on dinky singles where pop-ups are out 98% of the time. So there's very little, unless you're an Arkansas fan. Anyways, but pop-ups are more consistently outs. Ground balls are scary.
Did you just throw a little last year tidbit? Pop-ups are out 98% of the time.
If I didn't say it, someone else was going to, honestly. So Connor Noland is ground ball prone.
That's a bad matchup. If Texas Tech wins game one and Arkansas is Connor Noland, guy. If Connor Noland throws game two against Texas Tech, that's trouble, I think, for Arkansas. Just saying that now.
No, 100%. And the other, I'm not sure if I got cut out for a little bit, but anyways, Connor Noland also is not a punch out guy, which is not good. You need to have punch out guys in these games. We've talked about it before. If you have punch out guys, what it means is it doesn't matter how many people you have out playing defense. The guy struck out. You don't need any defenders.
And that's why Coastal Carolina won the national championship, because you looked at their bullpen and they were warriors that year. They definitely threw way more innings than what the coaches wanted, but they had three guys that I can't remember their name, but every single one of them was a punch out guy, like 1.4 an inning, like 1.6 an inning.
Yeah.
And that's what won them the national championship. Cause anytime runners were in scoring position, they would go sliders down and away, fastballs up and in, and just couldn't come back and hit those pitches. So punch outs play at this ballpark for sure.
100%. I mean, they won the national championship on a strikeout with the winning run in scoring position. So anyways, Connor Noland doesn't punch guys out. Big ground ball guy. That's volatile. Not good. And their top arms out of the bullpen are not multiple inning guys. They can't roll them out there to get 10, 9, 11 outs. They combined.
Well, they could. They just haven't much this year.
Right, they haven't. And to ask it all of a sudden now when they haven't done it all year, it's a way they could lose. That's all I'm saying. It's a way they could lose. Florida State, it's their defense. If you give teams extra outs in these tournaments, it's not going to go well for you. I mean, teams get three outs in this league, Ben. You give them four outs, that's like 25% more outs. It's not good, okay? You give me 25% more outs, I would have played baseball a lot longer, okay? That's all. So that's something the Florida State's going to have to look out for. It's really little. It's stuff that you won't notice necessarily. It's just an infielder not taking a right angle, outfielders bobbling a ball in the gap, and a double turns into a triple. Defense really plays this time of year, and their defense has been a problem all season long. So those are some tidbits on how teams could lose, some of their weaknesses, some of their strengths, some strengths that they're going to have to overcome on these weaknesses. These are the weaknesses or strengths we'll have to overcome. Say it however you want. That's the way I'm looking at it for those teams.
Right. Well, cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our College World Series edition of the show. You guys feel free to ask us questions. It looks like the plan right now is to go live on Twitter Saturday morning before the first game. You guys can
a little tailgate.
We'll have a fun little segment there so you guys can join us. Not set in stone yet, but that looks like the plan. We'll be giving you all the coverage you guys need and want for college baseball. We're here to grow the game. We want this to, you know, ultimately be one of the biggest sports in the world. So, you guys just stay with us, you know. We'll have your back. Just have ours. That's all we ask. So, thank you guys, and we'll be back Saturday.